Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to another edition of Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. I'm speaking to you live from Washington, D.C. I am your host, Bilal Masadiq, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Greetings to our audience. Assalamu alaikum to you, Brother Bilal.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Aziz. And, of course, we'll give our audience a chance to come on. And this tonight, of course, we our title is Introducing the Black Belt. And letting you know about the Black Belt Business Association. But after our visit today at the White House, where we participated in a march for our National Black Farmers, and after learning information that we just didn't know, and I know the general public, especially the African-American general public, have no idea what's going on. So I am going to start off, Brother Aziz, and of course you have your comments coming right behind me. Introducing Black Belt, New Africa, Black Belt Wall Street. I know every week that I get confused. That's why you hear me stuttering just a moment, because I'm used to coming on and talking about New Africa and Black Belt Wall Street, which is our LLC. But tonight we're introducing just the Black Belt Wall Street, which is a nonprofit organization. And as you know, and we've said before, and we'll repeat it again, that's in its origins, it wasn't called the Black Belt. It was called the Black Soil. And the Black Soil is where most African American, Black Soil first ranged from Texas throughout the South, all the way to Virginia, but you have to include Maryland and Delaware. And the Black Soil is where the highest concentration of the slaves that was bought into this country was sent. And that Black Soil is where African Americans worked the fields of this country and made this country not one of the richest countries in the world, but the richest country in the entire world. Came from the production labor that black slaves was brought here to the United States, the Caribbeans, and many other parts, but especially here in the United States. And like I said, it ranged all the way from Texas throughout Virginia, but you have to include Maryland and Delaware because they also own slaves. And that brings me, and of course, it was Booker T. Washington who put together a business plan when he was called to Greenwood District in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to meet with them to put together a business plan. And that business plan that Booker T. Washington and the Black Belt Business District put together ranged all the way again from Texas throughout the South, and to include places like Chicago, New York, and many, many other places that was financed by the business plan that was put together by Booker T. Washington and the professional organizers out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and many other places that joined him. And that business plan is where we was able to, that business plan that was actually financed, of course, by the Tulsa, Oklahoma, that business plan was that was put together, ranged, like I said, all the way from Texas to throughout the South. And this is where, is where African Americans were able to, first of all, get out of their sharecropper's debt, and was able to. The Great Migration took place during this time because African Americans, once they did see where sharecroppings and their debts were paid off, they saw where there was just no way of making monies in the South, so they started migrating to different places in the northern cities. And that's what I mean, places like Detroit, Chicago, Ohio, New York, and many, many other places that they migrated looking for a better life. But what kept the Black Belt district going was our black farmers. That's what kept the black soil, and the richness from that black soil was our black farmers. And during the time of Booker T. Washington and the produce of our black farmers, we was totally independent, and our money stayed in our communities for a period of, they tell me, as much as 40 months. It would circulate through our black communities before it went elsewhere. Today, as we know, that same monies only circulate in our communities for a period of 4 hours because not only have businesses been destroyed but also our farmers, our black farmers, have been, and what I've learned today, Brother Aziz, I just can't believe the discrimination. We talked about redlining. We've talked about it many times, about the effects of redlining and how they try to keep monies out of the black communities. But today, we witness firsthand. We witness firsthand by going to the demonstration that was held by the black farmers here in Washington, D.C. Excuse me. And that demonstration and that march they had in front of the White House, they let up, and I stutter because, brothers and sisters, the racial discrimination that's going on in this country, is frightening to the point as to where we know now, not only, like I said, redlining has always been intended to keep large amounts of monies out of the black communities. And this is something we know from our own history and our own studies, but to actually be a part of it. And what I mean is by being a part, those black farmers, they They came to Washington today. They've been to Washington many times, but they came to Washington today, and the lies that not only lies, but the land and that is being taken from our communities, especially all over the South. They want to take those black farmers. They want to take their land. And this is why the black farmers can't get the monies that has been justly promised to them now for, I guess, over 15 or 20 years. They've been not only lied to, but they've been used. For instance, black farmers, when they put in for requests and been putting in for requests for over 20 years, but they know for a fact from the time of Bill Clinton, and not only Bill Clinton, but President Obama, not only President Obama, but Trump. Administration and now the Biden's administration. All of these presidents have intentionally continued to see to it that black monies, black dollars, large amounts of black money stay out of our communities. Many grants have been put in, and many, many grants have been approved, especially with those black farmers. But those same grants, and like I said, I don't care if it was, but we're going to stay with President Biden because that's the one that we as African Americans did put in office. He wouldn't be there if it wasn't for us. But President Biden and his cabinet, his team, are nothing but a bunch of white supremacists. And you're talking about folks who have given African Americans more lies. And I'm saying if you ever get a chance, and we're going to try to have many of those farmers, those with the National Farmers Association, we're going to be having them on this radio where you can hear it for yourself. But like I said, being there and to hear what they have gone through is quite frightening because they're absolutely right. Once white folks obtain all of our lands, and this is what they're doing. They are taking our lands and taking lands from those black farmers, and they're doing it by all kinds of deceptions. Lied to is just a false statement. Brother Aziz, you was there with me. I'm going to ask you, I ain't going to wait for you to come in. I'm going to ask you to just come on in anytime you want to because we're both here to observe and what we observe. But to know that when you put in a grant or when you write a proposal, which these farmers have done many times, and these same proposals that they write, Biden administration and all the other past presidents have approved their grants, and some of them, the hundreds of millions of dollars, have been approved.
Mm-hmm.
But the black farmers never received a dime. Why? Because when these grants go to what is known as committees, because so once the president Once Biden or any other president approved monies for our communities, in this case for black farmers, now it goes to the secretary, and in this case we're talking about the Secretary of Agriculture. Well, the Secretary of Agriculture will approve whatever the president says we will. We want $1 billion going towards the Black Farmers, National Black Farmers Association, so they can be operational to grow crops for this country and for their own communities. These secretaries, and in this case, Secretary of Agriculture, they will send it to what is known as committees. And these committees are all basically folks that are white folks, first of all, that's going to be running these committees. And these
hand-picked
committees. Go right ahead, Brother Aziz.
No, I was saying they were hand-picked, brother, for the committees.
Oh, I just
so that they would.
Those
go ahead on, Brother
Lyle. Those committees are the ones. And like Brother Aziz said, they handpicked or what have you, but it's these committees that once it's turned over to, it goes to these committees now will take the same grants that black folks or the same proposals that black folks have put in for grant monies that is due to them or been approved for them. But these committees now will take that same monies that has been approved for our communities, and they will now change the proposals, actually change it. In many cases, they will even take the black proposals or the black folks who are black farmers or black business persons who wrote the proposals. And the proposals are written very well, have been approved, as a matter of fact. But now when it goes to the committees take and change everything. They will take now those same black farmers that wrote the proposals. The proposals have been changed. Their names have been taken off. And the white folks, they had their own names. And the millions and millions and the hundreds of millions of dollars that is supposed to have been coming to our communities or to those farmers. And like I said, we know for over 20 years now, these monies are going to white farmers. And they're picking up hundreds of millions of dollars that should be going to our community. See, that's what I mean about redlining. And white folks, not only
yes.
I say white, but the federal government, do not want large amounts of monies coming into our communities. And so to keep it out of our communities, yeah, you have politicians like our president and others who will come to us with a beautiful smile. But they know they have committees, and most of these secretaries that runs our different departments, almost all of them are white. You're finding a few. Biden has a few black folks in, but these African Americans are no more than puppets. But what it's going to come out to is that African Americans, like I said, you're going to get the approver up front. But what's happening on the back end of that approval is all going to go to white folks one way or the other. By hook or by crook, it's going to go to them. And so we have to, as African Americans, if we're not unified, if we don't come together as a very powerful people. And I'm going to tell you right now, they're waiting on the baby boomers, those African-Americans that are baby boomers. They're waiting on us to die.
That's
right. They want us to die we're the ones who know so much.
That's right.
About government. In other words, the baby boomers, we're well-educated. And we can make independent decisions. And I say that because our young folks have been taught by white folks. We've been talking about this many times, about most of the teachers in this country. 90% of them are white. And these 90% of these teachers that are teaching our young folks are brainwashing them. They're more or less trying to play one against the other. Our young folks dealing with the baby boomers or those of us who bought liberation and justice, freedom, and the pursuit of happiness to this country, they're trying to separate. They don't want our young folks knowing what we know, and most of our young folks do not know what we know simply because they are too involved or they've been brainwashed by the white society that has taught them everything they know. And they're looking forward to the baby boomers of this country. I mean, of this country, African-American baby boomers. They're looking forward to our dying. And one of the reasons is especially our black farmers. Because if they can take and can control all of the land, and as you know, our young generation have nothing to do with even think about being farmers. Even thinking about that, many of them have been inherited large amounts of land, and which they just totally ignore. Many of them don't even study agricultural science. Totally ignore it. They leave this now to the white folks to do. And they see no value whatsoever in becoming farmers or the study of the science of farming and the professionalism of that science. None whatsoever because, again, they have been taught to look elsewhere while white folks are taking black folks' land and they're doing it through federal legislation. So, like I said, I can't wait to have those African-American black farmers, and I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, those of you who are listening, if you know any members of the Black Farmers Association, you need to talk to them. You need to listen to them, because again, the day that we lose our lands, and the day that we lose the ability to farm and to feed ourselves, it's a sad day. It's a sad day. I don't know just how, but like I said, and I stutter because what I've been through today and the racial discrimination and that I realize, because on the surface it looks so good. Joe Biden on the surface looks so good. Joe Biden is not a friend of the African-American community because, again, Joe Biden realizes that he can give you a good-looking face, but he knows he's got those working in his administration that's going to see to it that not a dime hardly comes. And if it do come, some of the black farmers who was proposed millions of dollars, many of them said they was lucky if they walked away with $10,000. And if they did get a $10,000 grant, they were told that's all they could ever get. They can't even apply again if they accept these little small tokens that has been offered to them. So we have to, first and foremost, we got to really be angry. And what do we do with that anger? We start off by calling the White House. Get the number to the White House. We'll have that number. I meant to pull it up and tell everyone today, but it's easy to get the number. And we're going to have to start calling there, letting them know that we're sick and tired, letting Joe Biden know that if he don't straighten out the economical situations that we as African Americans are due, then we're going to do everything we can to get him out of that office. We put him there, and again, at this point, like we said, he must go because he's not doing anything. But thinking that he's tricking us all. But again, when you see this business about Donald Trump, Joe Biden, or any other of these white supremacists, they ain't got no interest. And I can repeat, they have no interest in the black community. And like I said, they're hoping that those of us, because those of us who are going to speak out and tell the truth on them are our generation,
right,
the baby boomers, because we know their tricks. And these African Americans have been into committees and negotiated, faced with all of these presidents. We've been in and gone face to face with all of his cabinet members, and all of the those who said, with the cabinet members who were saying, well, it's in this committee, it's in that committee, and this committee and that committee, they all tell us the same thing. Oh yes, we're going to. It's all been approved. It's going to be paid. But at the same time, when we find out about what happened to the monies. The monies was there, it was appropriated, but what happened to it? I can tell you what happened to it. Those committee members give it to their white friends all across this country. So, again, we as African Americans, we're going to have to, like I said, make ourselves known. We can't be quiet anymore. Brothers and sisters, you're talking about, as far as I'm concerned, our very survival in this country. There is nothing. Only thing these folks want to do is keep us all as poor as they possibly can, and they know one of the ways to do it is make certain those black farmers never get, just like our black communities, never get any large amounts of monies as to where they can do farm production, as to where they can make, first of all, the African-American community independent. Brothers and sisters, we can't live without land. We can't live without farm produce. We have to have food. And if we Marxist society, then now we are depending on the white supremacist society to feed us. Why? Because they have taken, they have all the land. And they're taking our land by hook and by crook. And most of it is through federal legislation. And yes, if it was asked, well, then why don't we take them to court? Why don't we sue? Well, the reasons why we know we don't have in that arena is because, again, the Justice Department are also against African-Americans. The Supreme Court don't give a damn about African-Americans. And the biggest leader of that leadership is Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas can't stand black people. He's still pissed off about Aziz? That hearing. That simpler hearing where he was trying to be nominated as Justice Supreme. And what went on in that hearing, what, some 30 years ago, Clarence Thomas. Go right ahead, brother.
There's something just recently happened to him where he had to come before the January 6th committee to testify on what he knew about his wife's conduct or behavior when it came to the buses that she sponsored to come up here with those people that tried to overrun the Capitol. That's what it was. He's upset because he had to answer to, like, he was so privileged that and elite that I don't have to tell you nothing about what my wife did, you know. Did you know? And they wanted to know, what did he know about it? And they wanted to see if he was going to lie, because how in the world are you married to a woman that goes out and rents two buses with a big behind, rents two buses to send people up to Washington, D.C. to protest Trump losing the election, saying that the election was false? Francis Thomas, is, as you said, brother, has been the lead one up there in the Supreme Court about trying to turn down or veto anything that might help African Americans out.
And of course,
he wasn't raised.
Go right. I'm sorry, brother Aziz.
He wasn't raised by an African American family either.
He was raised by Caucasians. Whatever he was raised by, his mentality is the same as the mentality of all those other white so-called justices on the Supreme Court. So that's why we know that when it says, then we'll bring on a lawsuit, for African Americans that don't work. White folks, it works. But African Americans, it won't work because our Justice Department is racist, and our Supreme
Big
Court.
Big time.
So you have a situation where the president can, and any bills that comes up, of course, it has to pass the House. And when matters of African Americans trying to get a bill passed the House will hear it, and even if it's a yay or nay, it goes to the Senate. The Senate is going to hear it. Then it's going to go to the president for the president's signature. Having nothing from the House to the Senate to Biden signing anything that would help the black farmers or to help our communities, because, again, it's just another how powerful redlining is. And redlining has been going on in this country now for over 100 years. So, again, brothers and sisters, we got to somehow get to our young peoples. We got to have them to realize And they got to get involved. That's why they don't realize nothing. It's because they're not involved. But I was glad today to see so many young folks from Mississippi, from all over the South, Florida, South Carolina, many parts of the South. They flew in here by airplane. They bought their own tickets to get here. But it was quite a few young folks in Washington, D.C. We wish it should have been larger, but it is what it is. But the information that we got that are facts, as far as money's coming into our communities through the Biden's administration, we got to either force his hand and he's got to do the right thing, or we have to get him out of the office, because Joe Biden and so forth haven't done anything but trick us. He used our vote to get himself in office, but now that he's in office, it's all about white folks. That's where our money is at. And they have no intentions. They're doing everything they can to keep monies out of the black communities, and especially the National Black Farmers Association. But I have to give it to those black farmers. Even though they haven't been receiving nothing, and even though they're, I hate to see how they're taking their lands through legislation, they're actually stealing our lands. Federal laws they're putting together to steal our lands. But it ain't like we don't know what they're doing. It's just it's a matter of how do we stop what they're doing. And the way we do that, the way we stop them, is we got to come together as a strong black nation. As long as we're divided, as long as we're not trying to join black organizations such as Black Wall Street, and there are others, and be coming together, and we're going to be, I can't even say a defeated people, because how would you describe it, Brother Aziz? What is the word I'm looking for? Because I know that our survival is totally in question here.
Well, like you say, we're on life support. And what we saw today, Brother Bilal, and participated in today, not only did it anger you and I, both as veterans of the war and veterans who've shed blood for this country, but to see that our brothers and sisters who provide food for not only our communities, but for other communities also, to see that they have been mistreated like the way they have and had to help one another to survive. That's what the Black Farmers Association has done. They've helped one another. And as a matter of fact, I know some through my mother telling me about that I had meat that is somehow kin to us that's up in Alabama, upstate Alabama, which is down below, down in the Mobile area. And they work together, working on each other's crops, just like the white farmers I know down there. One farmer doesn't have enough money to really own one big piece of equipment. So what they do is they work one another's fields together and all of that, using the same equipment as a combine, they call it a combine. But what we saw today was, and heard speak today, was black farmer veterans that have been at it for a long time, baby boomers, and maybe some even a little older than a baby boomer, firsthand brothers and sisters who had their land taken from them by USDA officials acting on behalf of the government. One sister owned, her family owned 2,500 acres of land. And through a systematic process, they only own 100 acres of land a day. When the sister said that, and I spoke to her after she had spoke, and I said, sister, that was 8 miles square, 2,500 acres of land. She said, yes, I know. I say, in any direction you go, for miles, that was your land, nobody to come and bother you. Some of it wooded, some of it clean for farming, of course. It was for farming, but you did have areas where wildlife lived also, where they could go out and do some hunting and get some wildlife. But what we heard was African-American farmers being denied the same opportunity that Caucasian farmers had, only they wasn't given any opportunities or suggesting opportunities. One of the brothers said, he was offered, like Bilal was saying, $10,000. He said, let me ask you something. If you had equipment out here, or if you had equipment out here that was worth $50,000 you had to pay on, you got a house over here to pay on and all that, would $10,000 take care of you? Answer my question. But you're going to give this to me. These are the kind of stories. This is just one of the many stories we heard about how they were losing their land and losing their property. And what they don't have is the support they need from us African Americans. That's what they need from the total African American community. In states where they don't do no farming, as well as states where they do farming, the whole African American community need to come together and support these farmers. And as far as the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Association, we're gonna support these black farmers, and we're gonna be letting known about their struggles. And we're hoping that some that we met today will come on and let the community know, let the world know, because we're hearing that our program is being heard outside of the United States and many other places. And what we're saying is, as a citizen of the United States, we want the history to be taught, true American history as it is. And one of the things about American history that's true is the federal government in a land of freedom, justice, and equality for all human beings and a democracy. The federal government takes it upon their own to redline a specific community of people.
Yep.
This is a fact. This is a fact. Yep. This is what they do. The federal government started it. And when they started it, the rest of the population, the white population, thought that that was okay to do it. So from not only that, the bankers, they started doing the same thing. And in a lot of our communities today, as they say, this activity that's going on in the community now, what do they call it?
Gentrification.
Gentrification. And thank you, sister.
Yeah, we got
gentrification. And that's a number too, you know, to you. Gentrification and that. That's a fine example of that system going on today. It's just used in so many ways. But what we heard today, and we want to continue, like I say, continue to support this, brothers and sisters, that just touched our heart. I mean, it was like, we had some signs that we also brought. One of the signs I got had the USDA secretary's picture on it, along with his assistant deputy. I'm trying to think of the lady's name, but we had some nice posters that they passed it out, And I'm going to put mine in a frame as one of the activities. And again, you know, we need support from the African-American community wherever you are in the United States. I wouldn't care if it's in Alaska, Maine, Massachusetts, wherever. Our brothers and sisters need our support.
Yeah, Brother Aziz, rather than we need their support, African-Americans need to support themselves right about now. Because, again, like I said,
yes, sir.
We're out. They want to, and I hate to use it, you almost want to use the word destroy our communities, but I know financially they want to make certain that we can grow. Brothers and sisters, I've said it many, many times. Our consumer spending, I have to say this again, our consumer spending last year was $1.4 trillion. Sister Aisha, you know this because you're the one who looked it up. They're projecting this year our consumer spending will be as much as $1.8 trillion. Brothers and sisters, we got to start keeping our monies in our own communities. We got to start taking it out of the white banks. We got to start taking our monies out of the white communities, period. We must start building businesses and building our own black communities and having the independence that Booker T. Washington and the Black Belt a business organization had during the early 20s all the way up to 1965. From the early 20s, from the time Black and Black Belt Wall Street, which was the Greenwood District, Black Belt Wall Street, they was also a part of the business district. And because they were so popular in the business achievements that they had in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they were the most famous of all of the Black Belt District. So again, we all was a part of that Black Belt District, but Black Belt Wall Street was the most populous because of their achievements. And the nation, the Black Belt Nation, give them the name Black Belt Wall Street. That's where the name came from. It came from the African-American business folks all over this country because it was from the Greenwood Business District of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And those huge amounts of oil that white folks have stolen from us, and now they're bringing in the trillions of dollars that's going to their communities. Brothers and sisters, we got to stand up and exert our powers. And the way you're going to do that, until you take that dollar bill away from white folks, and also start putting in politicians that have our best interests in mind. You know, I think of this new governor that we just got for the first time, a black governor in the state of Maryland. Take a man like that. That should be our president. Because, again, I've listened to this man. And this man is about asserting black power in the state of Maryland.
Right.
And if we as African Americans can put in our first black governor, we can start putting in first black governors all over this country. But we have to start coming together and asserting our business power and our political power. Brother Aziz, I am going to open up all the mics because, again, this is
the unity.
Go right ahead, Brother Aziz.
I was going to say, was going to say, Brother Bilal, there's one other thing I wanted to mention to the audience is that one of the policies that the USDA has had over a number of years is paying farmers not to grow a crop so that they can keep prices at a certain level. And, of course, all these farmers that they were paying not to grow these crops, and that were Caucasian farmers, while at the same time denying African-American farmers access to any of those funds. Now, here it is, somebody is trying to grow something for a living, and you're going to pay them not to grow it. But here are some people over here who want to grow it, and they can't get money to do anything. Just that I want the listeners to know that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has paid farmers and not to grow certain crops. And I don't know. I don't know if I heard any African American farmers experiencing that type of benefit from the USDA. And thank you for letting me put that in.
But like we were saying, and like they were, the black farmers were saying today. The reason they don't want the black farmers. To grow crops is, like you said, controlling the food prices. And they know you need to have food in order to eat. If our black farmers was growing a produce in their farms, as far as we could make our own food prices, and they know this is why they want to take away the power. I say power, but your ability to live, because if you don't grow food, and someone else can control how much you have to pay for food, just think how many African Americans that they want to get rid of that's in poverty, that they can just simply starve to death. They just took away the food stamp. They had no problems whatsoever. They know that, and that happened today. That they took away the food stamps, and now huge families, are going to be getting food stamps equaling to about $200 a month. And you got a family of five or six in your family, and you're going to be receiving around a couple hundred dollars a month. How in the world can you possibly survive, and your families, who is going to eat? Do you feed your kids and the parents don't eat? Because both of you can't afford to eat, or just a few of you. And that's going on right now as we speak. So, again, if African Americans could grow their crops, then now we are in control of the prices that can be set as far as buying the food that we must have in order to survive. That's why when it comes to monies for our black farmers, brothers and sisters, we're going to have to give those black farmers the monies that they want. We cannot let our black farmers go down. And like I said, one of the reasons why the black farmers are going down is they are taking their land, and the reason they're taking their land is because they know the black farmers don't have any monies, and they won't give them any credits, and they don't want to give them any credits because they want them to go into default. And as soon as they go into default, their legislators, federal legislators, are going in, taking their land. So again, we got to keep our monies in our communities, our churches. I don't care what large organization where we're putting monies, those monies has got to stay in our communities. And we as the peoples of the communities who are putting up these monies have to demand that these funds stay in our communities. Even if we have to get rid of some black folks, because because there's a lot of black folks out there playing the same game the white folks
yep.
are playing, and all over greed. And so don't think that many of you, and I hate to say it, a lot of them are preachers, but you got to start calling it out. You can't be secret about this stuff no more. And so like I said, calling Joe Biden, calling the White House, and letting Biden know if he don't change the economical situation of the African-American communities, our black farmers in our community, he will not let him know. We'll see to it that he get out of that office. And so again, but like I said, we got to become united, and we got to become very
Absolutely.
Proactive. So again, I am going to go ahead and I am going to open up our mics, and we're going to hear from our general audience. And any questions or any comments now, if you can hear us, we have all of our mics open, so we can hear you, and your voice can be possibly, and not possibly, but is being heard throughout the United States, many parts of the Caribbean, and many parts of Africa. So with that said, our mics are open. Brothers and sisters, we welcome your comments.
Thank you, Brother Bilal. While everyone in our listening audience is coming together with their comments, I would like to just do a historical breakdown of some of the issues that have taken place throughout America that we can trace back throughout American history that have impeded the wealth building of African-American people. And, of course, we know that everything began over 250 years ago with chattel slavery. But one issue that we seem to never talk so much about was the situation that occurred with through the congressional management of the Freedmen Savings Bank in 1874. And that was a tremendous introduction to the way the banking system and the other systems handle African-American people of color. And as a result of a mismanagement of the Freedmen's Savings Bank by Congress, the U.S. Congress, it left over 61,000 depositors. These were African-Americans, and we're talking about back in 1874, with losses of nearly $3 million. Now, if we bring that $3 million back from 1874 to the present day, we are talking nearly $1 trillion.
Good.
So
Good.
This is issue. And Congress has never apologized or tried to compensate these families, and it's not even mentioned in most of the information that we get. Then after that incident, the congressional mismanagement, of course we know the Tulsa Greenwood District fiasco back in 1921. Then we had the Jim Crow era of black codes. That, once again, limited an opportunity in many southern states for African-American people to achieve economic growth and prosperity. And, of course, in those southern states, you have Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, and so forth. Then when the GI Bill came along after Black Codes, we had African-American ex-servicemen, veterans, could not get loans for homes nor either to buy property. However, they could only get compensation or for education, some type of education assistance. And then that, too, was very limited. And then after that, we had the New Deal Fair Labor Standards Act, which really was a fiasco for our people. And now today, we have both redlining and gentrification. Now, everything has a trickle-down effect, and each one of these incidents throughout history have contributed to where we are now with redlining and gentrification. So I hear a lot in the background.
Let me say, brothers and sisters, if you're not going to speak with us, please put yourself on mute because we can hear you. I have all the mics open so we can all share our opinion. But if you're not going to speak, put yourself on mute so we won't hear the noise that you may be having in your room. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. So this history matters because the legacy monetary inequality is passed down generation to generation. So if we don't become conscious of the past, the historical inequities that have been perpetrated against the African American people, we will not understand the new schemes, and I have to call them schemes, that are going forward in the future of our children and our grandchildren. This country will always have schemes waiting for us to make sure that we do not prosper. So we as the people, we're going to have to take control of our own destiny, and we have historical figures who have always told us that we have to take control. And these black farmers down in the South or in the different parts of the country, if they are organized, but they need our support. And if we don't support them, we're no better than the ones who are perpetrating this historical inequity against us. We have everything to gain by supporting them and nothing to lose by supporting them. And if we think that we are in a comfortable position economically in this society, we better get another thought, because that is not the case when we have so many people who are dependent on wealth, social service, food stamps, and other handouts. We call them handouts, but we know that we put into this system, we pay our taxes, and we are entitled to them, these services. But however, the government calls them handouts when we are not listening to them speak on television or in the media. In the media, they call them subsidies. In the back room, they call them handouts. And so they are give us a little something to keep us quiet for the moment while they are still digging deeply in our pockets to maintain what they have and to give to their network. So I say to the listening audience, we have got to wake up and go to work and support each other. So, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, since I was not in D.C. yesterday, you might have covered this before I came on, did the farmers tell it how they would like for us to help them? Do they have a roadmap for what they, the kind of help and how we can best help them in this cause?
So, tell you right now, those black farmers, because they've been through so much when it comes to federal legislation, like I said they started coming to Washington during the time of Bill Clinton's administration. And the Bill Clinton's administration, they worked with all the liaison they act as their own liaison. They met with all the House of Representatives, the congressmen, the presidents, all the cabinet members, of the Bill Clinton administration, and they was told, yes, we have the money is being appropriated to you, and it's going to be the checks are going to be written. But again, when it went, when it got to the departments, in this case of agriculture, they the secretaries of that department turns it over to the subcommittees, and this is where all the stealings, and this is where a lot of the changes, this is where even forgery, because like I said, the proposals that was written and the grants that was approved from these proposals, when it got to these subcommittees, they, and these are white folks, all types of rich white folks that are I would say that would be the friends of the of whatever administration that is in office, and it ain't just Democrats, it's Democrats and Republicans on these subcommittees, and these subcommittees, like I said, African American, these African American farmers, like I said, they started way back during the time of Bill Clinton. And when they would say that, be promised that this is approved for you, hundreds of millions of dollars are approved for you, but when it went to these subcommittees in many cases would take the same proposals that black folks put in, and they would change, alter the names, and put their own names on these proposals. And then when the grants are issued, is issued to these white folks who said they written the proposals. The African American farmer said they don't know how many times that they have been said that, look, your proposal is paying. But when they look into where it's paying, they have found that they've been it's been stolen from them. And that started with Bill Clinton. And so I'm saying that to say these African-Americans, and most of them are baby boomers because they've been out there fighting for economical justice for so long, they are experts now when it comes to all of these administrations. Like they said, it started with Bill Clinton, and they said that they was lied through and it was proposals was paid to white folks during that time. And also when Bill Clinton left office and the Obama's administration, what's the boy's name? The Republican, Bush, the Bush's son. They was lied to during his administration, and then when the Obama's administration came through, again they was told the same thing, even by the Obama's administration. That yes, these are approvals. The money has been approved, but again, when it goes to these subcommittees, it's always going to end up in with these subcommittees. That's where the stealing is going to go down. And so again, right on to Joe Biden. And so, but it ain't like these African American farmers aren't and most of them are extremely educated. Most of them you would think are lawyers because of what they have been through as far as federal legislation and the legislation that's been approving the legislative lies that they had to, that they have to deal with. So again, yes, black farmers, and that's what I mean about, and like the black farmers are saying, today, because that demonstration they had today, like they said, even that was getting a permit to come down to do that demonstration, there were so many that was against them doing and tried to blackball that demonstration, but they got the permit, and we demonstrated, and they told their story because they didn't want black farmers telling this story to the nation. And I'm hoping that I'm hoping there's some TV news places. I know there was a lot of cameras down there. Aired this,
I checked about four of them this evening, Brother Bilal, in between 5 o'clock and 6:30, PBS, yeah, as well as News 7 and 4. I didn't see Check 5, and they made no mention of nothing like that. Anything from talking about the early bloom of the cherry blossoms and everything.
Yeah.
You know, they never mentioned that, and I'm saying,
Well, they don't want to mention it because, again, when you intentionally are trying to steal, especially from the black community, and when you're trying to intentionally destroy, but there's a word that I just have to use because that's what it is. They're doing everything they can to destroy our community, and the biggest thing they'd like to destroy is those of us who are well informed. So that's what I mean. They're hoping that the baby boomers would just simply die out, because they know once the baby boomers are gone, that our younger black generation, white folks have taught that generation, and they have taught them to get away from what we know as black power, not to have anything to do with it. And as far as farming, they don't advocate that at all. African American young folks are even trying to major in agricultural science. They don't want anything to do with putting their hands in the soil. Most of them have land that has been inherited to them. They don't even want to go down there and even see about the land. And like I said, legislators, they know this, they stay on top of it, and it's the federal legislators. So if the federal legislators are doing this to us, just think what the state legislators are doing. They are trying to destroy our communities, and one of the best ways to destroy a community is take away the land. If you don't have land, then now how do you survive on this earth without land? So, sister, so that's just about what we, like you said, Brother Aziz, and like we've said so many times, our communities are on life support. And unless we do something to save ourselves, I don't know what it's going to look like, especially around 15, maybe 20 years from now. Because 15 or 20 years from now, most of the baby boomers probably won't be here. And it will be left up now to our younger black generation who have been taught systematically to do what white folks want them to do. It wasn't taught by us. It wasn't taught by the black community. Matter of fact, like I said, they don't know very much about being an African American of the black community, period. So this is why we got to get our young folks involved, because most of them we think have been almost brainwashed. So, Sister Aisha.
I know it's
we're into your time period, and we can go on with this. But I don't want to take up your time period, but this discussion is going to be held quite often, because, like I said, we're in a desperate situation, but the way we can come out of this situation is that we have to take control of our monies. It must stay in our communities, which means we must put our commerce right in our own communities, and we must support those black farmers economically. So I am going to turn it over to you, and we can continue here. It is your show.
But before we do,
we'll go back to the audience and give them a chance to comment. Audience, again, our mics are open. We welcome your comments. You know, Sister Aisha, I'm looking at our board. We have a nice audience with us. Let me ask this question, though, before we... Are there any members of the Black Farmers Association listening to the show tonight, or is there anyone that was at the demonstration today? If so, we would like to hear from you, if it's no more than just hello. Is there anyone that was at that march today? If so, we'd like to know who you are. Our mics are open.
Well, I cannot imagine that there was no one there. I think I hear someone. Oh, that's my echo.
No. But anyway, we're giving them a chance to voice their opinion, and until we end the show tonight, they're going to have their voice, their opinion, the brothers and sisters. It's not time to be quiet now. It's a time right now. It's a time really for anger, and it's a time to start being very proactive. And one of the things we need to do, we need to call that White House, and we need to let Joe Biden know that he can either come clean, but the same way we put him in office, we don't want him in there no more. Because, again, Joe Biden haven't done anything but allowed this to happen. He know what's going on. It's his own cabinet members and those subcommittees and all like that, all of them work for or somewhat associated with his administration, the same way they've been associated with previously administrations. But, again, there's no way that he doesn't know. He is the one who said your monies have been approved, but he has not worried about whether those monies coming into our communities are coming to our hands. Brothers and sisters, again, our mics are open. We welcome your comment. Sister Aisha, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Yes. Thank you, Brother Balab. I was reflecting while you were talking. I remember back in the 70s and 80s, there were many of the black farmers had relationships in the northern cities with merchants and with community people, where they sent their produce from the farms, wherever they were, south or wherever, into the inner cities. And many organizations purchased those produce from the farmers directly at market price, and they were able to help sustain some of the farmers in the black farmers cooperatives. that was one thing that was done, and I think it was very successful. I remember two organizations that was very diligent in this working this process, and that was the Black Panther Party and the Nation of Islam. And some of the churches also participated. And the Black Farmers did well with that from my experience with those different programs. If we have to go back to that system, that is a successful system for that time. And if necessary, we have to do that again. But we're going to have to buy those produce, and we're going to have to find an outlet for those Black farmers. I am not optimistic, however, I do hope it takes place, that this government is going to put resources into the Black farmers, because, in fact, they will be competing with this group in this society that want to control the food chain worldwide, and especially in the U.S. So I'm not so optimistic, but this is one of the things that we can do as a collective of people to help the farmers. And we know that the farmers, and actually the farmers will bring in truckloads, large truckloads of their produce into inner city. And they said it was profitable for them, even with the expense of bringing the produce into the cities. And many of them had their own trucks. They did achieve some profit. So this is something that we as a people need to consider. We might have to start back doing this. Because think about it, the produce you're getting in the store is not that great. And oftentimes the produce was picked before it was ripened on the vines. And it doesn't have the taste nor the nutritional value of produce that we have been used to. So that's one of the efforts that was very successful during earlier days. And then, of course, it got so successful the farmers didn't need that particular program anymore, because they began to trade their own products. And one person suggested not too long ago that maybe they should consider sending the product internationally. Well, the difficulty with that, of course, if you have perishable products, by the time you pay for export and all of the taxes and whatnot, and then the distribution in country, you have no more profit margin, and the produce is probably not useful anymore. And in most countries, there is a gate stamped on produce that it has to have at least a 6-month shelf life. And so that's usually the only thing that can get into most of those countries are canned goods and not fresh produce. So we as an African-American community, we need to think of ways to get that produce sold and on our table. I'm not concerned about the other folks, because they already have networks that we don't even know about. But we have to go back to some of the things that we know were successful. And the need is still there. The need is still there. So if any of our audience, listening audience, have any ideas that we can pass on to the farmers, let us know. And not only just give us your idea, use your education and your skills to start implementing the idea. Oftentimes we come up with a lot of ideas, but we don't have the staff and we don't have the resources to implement the idea. But there are many of our people who are highly educated, especially the baby boomers, come up with strategies to implement the ideas that can help the black farmer. So I would like to invite our listening audience to participate with us. And I said last weekend at another time, we have countries in different parts of the world, pretty much all over the world, listening to this radio show. Now, I do believe that many of them are listening to find out what we're talking about to make sure that they can to try to limit our conversation or at least to make sure that they know the thinking of the African-American community around economic issues. But however, they are listening. And I have to admit, Zimbabwe, Canada, Russia, France, Tanzania, India, Kenya, Mozambique, South Africa, Ghana, Tunisia, Portugal, the UK, and Ireland are the countries that are listening to this broadcast. And we know this because we look on our back panel and it'll tell us the countries that have tuned in. So in Zimbabwe, 23% of our listening audience is in Zimbabwe. So I encourage you all, step up to the plate. Let your voice be heard. Come up with strategies because we can't do this unless we are unified. And we were not successful during the civil rights struggle other than when we became unified. There is no success. One or two people or three people can't do it. You're not recognized. So I encourage you to come on board with Black Belt Wall Street, Blog Talk Radio. Let your opinion be heard. And yes, if you have great opinions, we're going to say, can you start the process of implementing this? Can you start the process of contacting the farmers and working with them and learn their schedule for production? So this is the kind of help we need.
Sister Aisha, Brother Aziz here.
Yes.
Met a gentleman today, a African American and a Caucasian guy that both of them had worked for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and in different departments, but they knew each other well. And the Caucasian came down to this because he heard it was going on, and I guess the African American had told him. And we had quite a conversation with Bilal and I and the two guys. And what they talked to African-Americans, he said, I think he retired 2 years ago. And he said he was the last so-called, what would you call it, racial discrimination guy there, that supervisor that would look into the cases of racial discrimination. And he said after they left, that new USDA guy, he did eliminated them, did away with all of that. That department doesn't exist again. And the white guy said, yeah, matter of fact, a number of people at the USDA signed a petition not to have this guy be in charge of the department of the USDA because they say not only was he a Dixiecrat, he was just a real prejudiced person. And that's the kind of stuff that we heard today, and we wish to come on and talk about stuff like this because these people were retired and they wasn't afraid to share this information. But this is a government type of sponsor, again, racism towards the African American farmers and that right there in house, and they don't really they know that the people we talk to know that, but that's some of the type of conversation we heard from the African American farmers, as well as people that directly work with the USDA and knew that.
Well, you know.
Let me just say this, Sister Aisha, Brother Aziz. These are direct is that you was talking about, Brother Aziz. They were the adopters of the Office of Economical Opportunity. They were that's jobs were in the federal government. And from their many years of working with the Department of Economic Opportunities, they was never able to do anything as far as ending racism or the many, many topics that we're talking about today, such as the black farmers and the black communities, period. So what happened, they were the last of the Departments of Economic Opportunities. When they retired, that position retired. So they don't even have the Department of Economic Opportunities in your federal workplace. They don't recognize the Department of Economic Opportunities. And we know that was started by the Kennedys way back in the 60s.
That's correct. And go
right ahead, Sister.
And that is the case. Well, we know that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has been one of those earmarked organizations or departments in government that have really trampled on the equality of African Americans in this country. And so I remember I was in the position of interim director of affirmative action and employment research at Rutgers University. And we never were able to make the inroads that we wanted to within those university departments that really catered to or took the direction from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, although we had great successes in many areas. So when we are dealing with U.S. Department of Agriculture, we come in with the attitude that it's going to be the worst situation, and usually it is the worst situation, because I have to believe that their mandate within itself is to squash any effort of the African American to be independent. Independence really means controlling your food source. If you cannot control your food source or have food, you can't be independent. And that's a major issue. So now we don't use the terminology affirmative action. However, now there's a new terminology, DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that's pretty much some of the same thing as the old affirmative action. And affirmative action was correcting the inequities. DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, is analyzing and making recommendation to the government to correct the inequities. So they kind of changed it up a little bit. So we don't go in and say, this is how, this is the regulation you got to follow, or this is the way you're going to have to restructure your organization to combat racism. Now is that we'll show you where you are falling short, but we hope you correct it. There's no court-ordered mandate in place, but now, as it was with affirmative action.
You know, sister, and at that demonstration today, and we was pretty assertive out there. It ain't like we was holding back anything. But many of the Caucasians that visit the White House every day and walk past the White House, all those Caucasians out there stopped whatever they were doing and give us, their attention was definitely all on us. When we were leaving the demonstration, Caucasians were telling us, look, it's way past time. They was thanking us. They said, this is something that African Americans should have to do. They said, you guys, this is way past time. You got to be assertive. and that they was thanking us for bringing out the fact and for being assertive, because they white folks know what's happening to us. But at the same time, if we don't say someone is stepping on my foot and it's painful, then it's just not going to be said. There ain't going to be any excuses for you. What we were doing and the assertiveness that we took today, they saw strength in that, and they was actually thanking us for being proactive in our own determination. And that came from the crowd that because when you go down to the White House, you got all kinds of crowds going many different ways, many schools and what have you. They all out there with their microphones. All of them put their mics down. And they all give us their fullest, and even the police officers, the Secret Service police officers, especially the black ones, was glad. It's like you said, we're saying what they might be afraid to say. They can't say or what have you. But by having African Americans being assertive and being proactive against their own survival is what those folks can really appreciate. So brothers and sisters and brothers, our mics are open, and it's going to be open for a while because we got to save ourselves. And the way we're going to be able to do it, we're going to have to unify. And one of the ways you can unify is becoming members of Black Belt Wall Street. And you can become a member just by going to nabassc@gmail.com. nabassc@gmail.com. And send us your information or join us. Become a member. We need your memberships. nabassc@gmail.com or .org, either one. And come and join us, but most of all, become members because we need large numbers. Anytime you're dealing with the federal government or any type of, but especially the federal government, if your numbers are not large, they realize that we can ignore you. And so we need to have large numbers because, again, we need to have legislators. We need to have a liaison of voices when it comes to federal legislation. And some of those black farmers that we heard from today would make perfect liaisons to speak to our government legislators when it comes to the House, when it comes to the Senate, when it comes to the President, and when it comes to his cabinet, or when it comes to businesses. And we need these voices throughout the legislative process, because again, our representation is just not there. You go up there on Capitol Hill every day, and you're going to see hundreds of different liaisons representing all kinds of different companies and corporations. But you're not going to see very many African Americans representing our communities and our concerns. Black Belt Wall Street, we want to start our own liaisons, but we need the numbers in order to do so. Go right ahead, Sister Aisha.
Can you give that email address again?
NABASSC@gmail.com or .org,
okay.
Either one. We have both of those icons belongs to us. So NABASSC@gmail.com, and you can send your memberships in. We're prepared now to take memberships, and you can do that through Cash App, or you can do it through
PayPal.
We have PayPal, but we really
no,
don't Zelle, like PayPal.
No, Zelle.
We have Zelle. We have PayPal, but we don't try to. We have PayPal. I'll just put it that way. But Cash out of Zelle is where most of our funds are coming through. And but we need your memberships, or we need your emails to know something about your concerns. But like I said, this is a community movement, and we're no more than the voices that are trying to ignite that movement. So again, Sister Aisha, I'm going to go right back with you, but I wanted to share that.
Okay. You know, another way that you can help this radio station and the work that we are trying to do, especially Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, they started this. How many years ago has it been? Six, seven years?
Eight years ago.
They started this dialogue on the radio with Blog Talk Radio. 8 years. One of the things that I have been really pushing and trying to get the involvement, and that is the involvement of our young people, our young college people, our young professionals, our young working people. We need their involvement because there has to be a legacy established here where this dialogue will continue. And as we go off the scene in the few years that we have left, we need our young African Americans to pick this up and continue with it. So if you know of young professionals out there, give them the call-in number so they can call in and get a feel of what we do here. And with the understanding that they might want to join us, or that and that they should join us, because this is a legacy that will be passed on to them. But if they are not with us, the legacy and the hard work over 8 years will be for naught. And I think we are seeing that too much in our community. So I'm certainly pushing my young people, the ones I come in contact with every day, I'm giving them the call-in number, and I'm saying, call in and listen and try to find your place here with us. This is what we want. We want to leave this legacy. So if you all can help us out there, please do so.
Also,
yeah, that's a great idea. Thank you, Sister Aisha. That's a great idea.
Also, Sister Aisha, Brother Aziz, are our listeners. Anyone have the number to the White House? I meant to pull it up.
Hello.
We need to call the White House.
Hello.
Go right in, brother. Welcome to the show. Yes, hello.
Yes. Yeah, hello to everybody. Yeah, my name is Usman Dalami again.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Welcome, Brother Usman.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I have a question, you know. And first of all, is there anything or any kind of document that was came out of the demonstration today that somebody can share, other than just word of mouth, that somebody can spread from place to place?
No, they didn't have any kind of documents or anything as far as the information that we received today. We didn't have any kind of, most of the information Brother Aziz and I are sharing with you is what we just simply remembered by being there. But we are not giving you, we're not giving you the real value of that demonstration
then,
because.
Then also, okay, then also I think Sister Aisha said something about people coming up with ideas, and I think I did submit some kind of ideas regarding a link. I sent it to Sister Aisha, I sent it to Kristen, and I sent it to Brother Byron. I don't know if you received it. I think that is where
I haven't received anything from... No, I haven't received anything.
Okay, because I think I sent information concerning the land and also some kind of collaboration I have initiated with Black Farm Association in Florida.
Okay.
I think I sent all of that. Yeah. And really, it was a strategic suggestion that I was trying to make. Like I was talking about food security, which the sister referred to here, because definitely, you know, you have to feed yourself. And that is the initiative that many African countries are trying to really follow right now. And I thought it was necessary for me to really contact Black Farm Associations for to be able to collaborate and really address that issue. And I also spoke about the need for us to be independent of the wheat flour. As a matter of fact, Nigeria supplements its bread flour with wheat flour that's grown, the winter wheat that's grown in Texas. And I was looking if there are black farmer wheat growers. We have to be proactive. We can be able for us to really establish the cassava flour industry and supplement it with the black farmer wheat flour. These are things that we can do. And there are so many other things. I also did mention about maybe how we can be able to link historical black colleges to this type of initiative. We can be talking for 20 years, but the only thing is we have to sit down and really take 5 topics that we can focus on. That should be our focus, and then we have to do, because, yes, everybody's getting old. I'm an old man right now myself. You know, it's just a matter of time. So we talk about really passing on the baton, but what is the strategy? What plan do we have? In that regard also, I suggested that probably maybe I wouldn't mind. I can travel to Maryland or anywhere for us to really have a strategic meeting and select few points. And I spoke to Brother Biden about that, and he told me, I think the chairman, I say, it's just a suggestion. Chairman, everybody have to be there. But we have to focus on certain things. All what you're discussing here, they are all in place. But we have to really nail it down to few points that we can be able for us to really measure the activity to see, give it landmarks to see, okay, this is what we decided to do. How did you get to that? Where are we? stuff like that. This have to be in place. Like, I know, like when I came here, you know, like when I was in Africa, they used to sell an apple, maybe like 10 cents. 10 cents was a lot of money. So we used to buy an apple and share it among 20 of us. So I came here in Detroit. I was near the Eastern Market. And I used to go there and buy a whole bag of apples for $1. So I ate enough apples. So up to this day, I've lost taste for apples. And there were a lot of black farmers that were there. Now if you go to the Eastern Market in Michigan, Detroit, all the place was 90% farmers, black farmers. Now you cannot find a single one. You see, so, you know, talking about these things is really ideal, but we have to have some kind of concrete plans about how we can be able for us to really pass this baton. And also, I can assure you that probably maybe the way I look at farming here now and the way I look at such a situation, the only way we can be able for us to empower the black farmers is probably maybe they have to be able for us to link with Africa. The need is there. Africa is going through the same thing. It's a continent that has everything, and we're still suffering from hunger. So I am proposing that we really sit down and really try for us to really set some benchmarks, concrete benchmarks, and how we can achieve them. You see?
Yeah.
So,
Brother, you and like I did, I received your information, but at the same time, as far as as far as Africa is concerned, you have some very good ideas, and I agree with you. If we can do something in Africa, then those plans that you're talking about should be implemented, and we should be discussing and working on it. But when it comes to the Black Farmers Association, the Black Farmers Association can make, like I said, black farmers made this country the richest country in the world. Those same black farmers could make any African country anywhere in the continent of Africa the richest countries in the entire world. These black farmers, they have a plan. These black farmers are educated when it comes to the science of agriculture. And so, again, yes, as far as a plant, because that may be our alternative, but we know we are Americans. We don't know anything at all about Africa. As a matter of fact, what we do know, many of us, there's a lot of apprehension, but that can be changed. But I am saying, as Americans, this is our country, and we have to see to it that we get what we deserve right here at home. And the reasons we don't get, and if African Americans cannot achieve a power here in the United States, how in the world are we expected to achieve power somewhere else if we didn't do it at home?
I can answer that question. But but really, I don't want to go in. I don't. If you remember let me see. The proposal I sent you, there was a concept document that was developed by Dr. Latricia Wilson.
No, I don't want to hear it.
That was definitely a black American initiative.
We do not want to hear it. We do not need, and I, if you have us to be too direct, you ain't going to like it. But we have to solve our own problems. We cannot have, we love the proposal of dual citizenship. It can happen in Africa, but we don't know enough about that yet. But we do know that we've been doing a struggle here in the United States for 500 years. And that's and the struggle that we as African Americans do here in this country really benefits all of what they call third world countries. So again, no, there is not and when you say you can answer the question for us,
no,
we don't need to
because the document I sent you.
I'm going to finish because again, you're not even a member yet. So we put up.
I have tried for me to be. I went to the website. I sent an email. I couldn't get no response.
So again, we can't have you taking up a whole lot of our time. We don't mind you being associated with us, but we ain't looking for your leadership. As African Americans, we're going to solve our own problems, and we know how to do it. We know that we're working with something, white folks, and these same white folks have taken Africa. Same white folks made us slaves. These same white folks, Africa today in their pocket, as where Africa, one of the richest continents in the world. Those black Africans over there don't have nothing to show for it because the white men have them in such a desperate situation. So, yes, there are things that African Americans and Africans can do together, but please don't come in and start telling us we have a plan. We have our own plan. And if you wish to join our plan, we welcome you. But no, this business of telling us I got a plan and we got to go by you, it ain't going to happen.
No. I didn't say that. As a matter of fact,
we'd love to have your participation, but participate with us. Don't tell us what to do.
Can I say something, please? Even the email I sent to you, I just said, if you read it, I said, this is my humble opinion. And one of the proposals that was there, the proposal came from the Black Farm Association from Florida.
Again, you're trying to talk over us and tell us what to do. We don't want it. I don't want it. So, again, our show is getting ready to end at this point. We love to have your participation, but participate with us. Don't tell us what to do because, again, you got, I hate to say it, Africa has enough to do by telling itself what to do. So with that said, Sister Aisha, we're just about ready to close out. But like I said, African-American communities, we're on life support. We have to come together as African-Americans, and we have a great big problem that's called racism that we've been dealing with now for 6 years. We got to deal with that problem. So we got 90 seconds. Any comments Brother Aziz or Sister Aisha would like to make before we close?
We want to let Brother Usman know that we appreciate his participation, and please stay with us, become a member, a participant, and we just want to let you know that we have to work here in the U.S., and this is where we're going to have our success, and participate with us with that in mind. And we want you, we love to hear from you, and don't stay away, but come back next week and the week after that. But we are going to come together.
We want members. If you're not a member, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, sister, I will send my permission to you.
Okay.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people a better day is coming for you and for me. With just a little bit more education and love for our nation would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say. And how long have you held your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people a better day is coming for you and for me. With just a little bit more education and love for our nation would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother?